Warnings of a recession are growing louder as we near selling. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Red Pill News Live. I have a special request, you guys. The way I get on the leaderboard is purely decided on the number of likes. So if you guys please would consider helping out the show, 99% of you, well, roughly more like, I don't know. It's the vast majority of people watch the show. They don't hit the like button. It's so easy. It's so simple. You can do it on every single platform that you're on. I just need you to hit that like button. We've got over 1,000 people here already over on Rumble and only 158 likes. So sit back, relax, grab your popcorn. We're going to be right back after this. Warnings of a recession are growing louder as we near sell in May and go away. Citibank warned the soft landing dream is over. The U.S. economy is headed for a recession in the middle of 2024. Morgan Stanley warns a U.S. dollar regime shift could threaten stocks. And meanwhile, the Fed's most trusted recession indicator is flashing code red. Because every recession since 1945 has been preceded by a yield curve inversion. Meanwhile, the M2 money supply is meaningfully contracting for only the fifth time since 1870. All signs appear to point to a sizable downturn for the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ. Now, meanwhile, gold prices have been hitting all-time highs, and the rally is far from over. Now, y'all know silver is always late to the party, but once it finds momentum, it can easily outperform gold. So protect your retirement with gold or place a bullish bet on silver. Call the proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today before it's too late. Just mention Red Pill 78 and this show, Red Pill News, and you're always going to get best-in-class service from Patriots Protecting Patriots. Patriot Gold Group has the no-fee for life IRA, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you just might be eligible for that no-fee-for-life IRA on qualifying rollovers. So give them a call today at 888-857-6092 and get your free investor guide today. Patriot Gold Group is a Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row. Call them today at 888-857-6092. 857-6092. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you so much for being here. If you've hit the like button, thank you very much. If you're still waiting until the end of the show to see if you like it, to hit the like button, I understand. But I'm going to make an additional plea here right now. Please, before you leave, just hit the like button. It really does help out. You're spending all your afternoons with me right here, and I feel like it's an adequate trade-off. Perfectly normal trade-off. It's a quid pro quo, and it helps us both. It helps you feel better knowing that you're supporting the show, and it helps me feel better knowing that you guys enjoy the show. Thank you so much. If you're over on Pilled and you've hit the red pill, I sincerely appreciate it over there. I love it. If you're over on Getter and you tap the screen, you get some hearts. You do the same thing on X as well. So thank you, thank you, thank you, no matter where you're watching the show. For some reason, I've been trying to go live on Locals here recently, just because, I mean, it's the same stream, but it's a different platform, and I know that some people really like Locals. But for some reason, like when I set it up as an RTMP, it like switches the type of stream that it is when I start it, and then it's just my camera on me, and nobody that's on the stream can see what's going on. So anyways, I had to cancel the local stream. And I'm gonna still try to do something like for the Pilled members and for the local stream and for Subscribestar, but it's just, you know, there's so much going on. This Friday, guys, I am going to be live at the Flynn documentary premiere in Venice, Florida. That show has sold out. However, if you want to come and see the show this weekend for the opener, you can still go to the Winter Haven show. Winter Haven is actually closer to me, but my guest that's scheduled for Saturday was not able to reschedule. So we were able to wiggle Friday around, and I was there. Here's the special announcement. I'm going to be there live from the premiere from the very morning. I'm actually helping to set up and, like, you know, giving them my time because I believe in this film. I believe in General Flynn as a true American patriot. And what I'm going to do is actually live stream the event. So I'm going to be there at the premiere, and they're going to set me up with a hard line so I've got reliable internet, and I will be interviewing people who are coming. So I'll get to interview General Flynn on set. I'll be able to interview Ivan on set. I'll be able to hopefully interview Kash Patel and Devin Nunes and pretty much everybody else that you might imagine is going to be there at this premiere. So as far as I know, I'm the only person who's going to be live streaming all day from the event up until the moment that it actually goes live. So you'll be able to come here, check out you know, specific times during the day when I'm about to interview somebody. I'll put a notification out there on all of the platforms. And if there is going to be any sort of break, then I don't know, maybe I'll put like a, you know, we'll be right back sign up or something like that. But then after I come home, I'm going to take that extended, you know, maybe 6-hour live stream, and then I'm going to chop it up and we'll take those individual interviews and put them out there. So, again, I wanted to give a big shout out to General Flynn for setting me up with this. I also want to give a big shout out to Esther G, who is back from her Lenten fast. Esther, it is so good to see you. Thank you very much. If anybody else out there was giving up chatting for Lent, you know, obviously, Jesus is back in town, baby. He is risen, and so you may be back here as well. Thank you very much for hanging out. I'm going to be sharing the link to the General Flynn movie link. You can go there. Just click the Winter Haven event if you don't have tickets for Friday to Venice, and you can go there. You can also pre-order the DVD right now, and I believe it's going to start delivering on April 9th. Now, there are also a whole bunch of other shows. So if you're not down here in Florida, then click on the link, head on over there and see if you're going to have a showing in your town. And then you can go see it live. You can hang out with General Flynn. You can ask a bunch of questions to whoever ends up being there at that particular showing. And if you order the DVD right now, it's going to be a special edition that has something like an extra hour's worth of footage that is not going to be on the DVDs that are sold at a later date. So you want to get in early if you want to make sure that you want to see that stuff. It's only $25 and, you know, it's all going to help help the cause. So thank you also very much to Cyber X-Speed. He says, I got your mail. Yay. Wasn't expecting Biden stickers, but thanks nonetheless. I had Lisa had found a whole bunch of these I did that Biden stickers that I was slapping up around town on gas pumps. So that's what I expect you to do with them, Cyber X-Speed, is anytime you see an effect of Bidenomics, feel free to go ahead and slap that sticker up, and then people will know that you're based and it's all Joe Biden's fault. Loop to Loop, thank you very much for the cookie. Just Duckies says, much love, and everyone, hope you had a wonderful Resurrection Day. God bless all of you on this day, and I'm assuming into the future. And then Porpoiseful, thank you very much for the cookie. All right, so let us begin here today. This is something that caught my eye coming out of Utah. And although Utah gets a lot of smack because they sent Mitt Romney to the Senate so many times, I think that this is actually a really, really interesting story. And considering the gold sponsor for the show, I thought it was totally appropriate. So Utah has formally passed a bill in their state house, which allows for the state treasurer to protect state funds using physical precious metals, gold and silver. Warrior Mima says, congratulations, Zach. It couldn't have happened to a better guy. I look forward to your coverage. Thank you so much, Mima. I really, really appreciate it. Yeah, I'm really excited, to be honest with you. I mean, I've interviewed many people who I'm sure are going to be there, but I know that there's going to be a lot of people that I've never had on camera before. So I was getting like all my lenses together, making sure all my batteries are charged, make sure I've got my chargers that I can plug into the wall. I got to get like a power strip and take that with me. I'm probably going to have way too much stuff, but I would rather be overly prepared than not prepared enough. The one thing I don't have and that I keep telling myself I'm going to buy and I just never do – is like one of those tablecloths, like that will have my logo on it. If anybody out there is a printer and like you can help me out with this, I think it's probably too late to get it before I leave on Thursday night. But, you know, maybe I'll be lucky, but, you know, hit me up, redpill78@proton.me. And I also want to get like a sign that I can hang up behind me, kind of like the one that Beamish Metalworks sent. Thank you very much again to Beamish Metalworks. And, hold on a sec. Where is the code that you can use at Beamish to get free shipping? Oh, gosh. Oh, yes. Okay. So if you head on over to BeamishMetalworks.com/RP78, use code RP78 and you're going to get free shipping on your order. Mr. Beamish, thanks again for sending me that amazing, amazing sign. Pretty much by, well, after this weekend, after I get back from the movie premiere, I'm getting that other side of my studio all set up. And I think that's where my interviews are going to be from now on, with that sign in the background behind me. I think that it'll be a nice little breakup in between the two halves of the studio. So, this bill was sponsored by a guy by the name of Ken Ivory, Representative Ivory. It was HB 348. Now, it's not a requirement, but it puts it into law so that the state treasurer can, if they so desire. And I have to be honest, considering the state of the economy, just out of control inflation and how interest rates are out of control, the state treasurer now has the ability to hold up to 10% of the state reserve accounts in physical gold and silver. Clearly, this is going to be a hedge against inflation. This is going to allow for a secure asset to ensure that the money of the people of Utah isn't going to be at risk of just, you know, being pissed away, essentially, because of financial turmoil or because of interest rates or inflation. And it is allowing a capital gains as measured in Federal Reserve notes. So they have limited options already in place for holding, managing, and investing the state money of the people of Utah. So this legislation makes it possible for gold and silver to be included in that limited set of options. Their reserves are invested almost exclusively in corporate bonds and with banking agencies. And we've seen a lot of banks go belly up in recent years. I think bonds are not what they used to be. But these debt instruments have a low sort of volatility. They can carry risks, though, and that includes the fact that inflation can devalue them. And if you hold them for long enough, you know, I mean, money continues to be worth less and less and less, and then that real principal value becomes less and less and less. And then, obviously, interest rates quite often can go into the negative on these sorts of things. So people in, you know, the state of Utah, they might actually lose money in the long run. So this specifically pertains to the state disaster recovery restricted account. This is also the general fund budget reserve account, the income tax fund budget reserve account, and the Medicaid growth reduction and budget stabilization account. It is a legislation that's backed by the Sound Money Defense League. Those are great people. Money Metals Exchange as well. Clearly, there's a lot of gold bugs in the state of Utah. Now, it also does not grant authority to buy stocks, futures contracts, or other financial instruments, because how many times have we seen that? You know, these large holders of these sorts of things, they go all in on something like, I don't know, Tesla or Apple or, you know, or they allow somebody like BlackRock to do it for them. And then we have volatility in the stock market and things are looking like it's going to get pretty rocky here pretty soon. You know, in terms of the financials across the globe, you know, the United States dollar as the world reserve currency, just the value of the dollar itself. Joe Biden's not bringing any value to the United States. I think that all can change under Donald Trump, but it's still going to be a long, arduous process along the way. So I just thought this was a really, really good thing. And I know that there's people out there who probably live in Utah, Utah Money Mover. I don't know if you're out there right now. But if there is, you know, just people who are interested in the idea of sound money, using gold and silver as a storage of value. I mean, it's the only thing that I still invest in. I'm certainly not really getting into crypto anymore, and I don't have any money to play the stock market, but I can buy a couple ounces of silver every couple of weeks. So just wanted to go ahead and bring this to your attention. If you're somebody who lives in Utah and you know perhaps about the practical application of this, I'd be very interested to learn. And I think that this is something that you could also kind of put pressure on your own state reps for, because if we have gold and silver as a storage of value all across the country, then it makes it a lot easier to transition into a system that is based upon real money, sound value. So just want to give a big shout out to them. All right. Now, the discussion about the upcoming eclipse is still kind of raging. And I was maybe a little bit surprised or perhaps not that to see that Niagara Falls is now jumping in on the bandwagon. I guess they've declared a state of emergency for the solar eclipse. I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, one of two things could be happening here. Either they are just trying to scare everyone into staying inside for one reason or another, or maybe they are planning for some major disaster to happen at the time that this eclipse takes place. And I mean, you know, it's possible that that could be it. It's possible that they know something that we don't. I think you can probably enjoy the partial solar eclipse from wherever you live in the United States. But obviously, if you want to get the best possible view, there's that strip of land that you got to go through. And, you know, I could understand them like maybe calling a state of emergency in all of the Ninevehs, like all of these cities with the same name that are going to have a lot of people there probably. But for them to just continue to harp on this idea that something is going to happen, I don't know. I think that it's worth definitely keeping an eye on, but I'm not really going to disrupt my day in any particular manner. I'm not going to allow it to scare me from doing anything that I wouldn't normally do. And I'm also not going to put a lot of energy into it. But they have declared a state of emergency for the eclipse, which is coming up on April 8th. They put out a press release from the Niagara Regional Chair, a man by the name of Jim Bradley. He said that they're doing it out of an abundance of caution. So I suppose there is a third option. Maybe they're just getting scared because other official sources have said this might be a bad day. So he confirmed in the press release, declaring a state of emergency under the EMCPA strengthens the tools the region has at its disposal to safeguard the health and safety of residents and visitors and protect our critical infrastructure in any scenario that might arise. Maybe they know that some of those terrorists that they allowed to come in through the southern border have made their way up into Canada. I mean, I don't know how successful you're going to be blowing up Niagara Falls. I mean, this is a natural formation, is it not? Is there a dam or anything at Niagara Falls, you guys? Anybody have an idea? I'm not certain. So it will be going right over these. So I'm flocking there. Huh. Well. Okay, free the nipples. Thank you. Okay, no, I thought this was just a natural formation. All right. So the mayor of Ontario, Jim Diodati, he's expecting the Canadian side of the falls to receive over 1 million visitors on the day the eclipse is set to occur. Is the eclipse going to be going over? Yes, Buckshot Funk. We actually talked about it over the weekend on the show that I did with Clay Clark. Yes, he says, did you hear CERN is going to be firing up a new huge Hadron Collider the day of the eclipse? Yes, I have seen that. And that also could be the reason why they know that things are going to go bad. But if something like if they create a black hole underground in CERN, or, you know, they open a portal to another dimension and it just swallows everything up, we're not going to know anyways, guys. I mean, we're all going to get swallowed into the black hole and crushed at the exact same time. So, I'm not really worried about it. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that they're not going to try to get away with whatever sort of horrible things they can. Oh, Eliza. Okay, yes. I knew there was something. But, yes, and a big hydroelectric power plant. Okay, well, that makes sense, too. But I'm kind of surprised to know that they're getting this many people. I mean, I guess, you know, the Niagara Falls is beautiful. I went there once when I was very young. I don't really remember it. It just seemed like it was a lot of water. Yeah, maybe it's going to be a good place to see it. Certainly, obviously, there's a lot of outdoor space and people will be able to look up. I mean, you could do that from your front yard, though, so I don't know. But anyways, just wanted to keep that in mind. You know, it's been 1979 since the last time. Well, excuse me. You know, no, there was a total eclipse a couple of years ago, but this one that they were talking about from 1979, I actually saw a TikTok video. I guess maybe it was a total eclipse a couple of years ago when Goat Herder was on the show and we were talking about it. But maybe the last one that was visible was for Niagara Falls in 1979. I saw a news report from NBC Dallas-Fort Worth, and they were talking about it. So I guess a lot of people are going to show up. Maybe don't go to Niagara Falls. Like I said, you can just go to your front yard. Go to your front yard. You'll be fine. You'll be able to see everything. Mm. Yes. And as Lisa just said in the chat, if by some mistake you were unable to watch any of the shows this weekend. I mean, last week I interviewed General Flynn. Friday, we had a great show with Clay Clark. And then Saturday, I had a great show with Colonel Douglas A. McGregor. You know, I had like two bucket list interviews in the same week. So that was pretty awesome. And I thought they all went really, really well. So, you know, obviously you guys know I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm like the bestest or anything like that. But I thought that they were great conversations. So I would highly recommend seeing them, even if it wasn't me interviewing them. All right. So this actually I learned about over the weekend and I didn't get a chance to talk about it, but it is now widely being reported and it affects me because I have AT&T as a not as a cellular provider, but as a internet provider. So they've got all of my personal information and I'm not exactly certain yet whether or not I am part of the 73 million current and former customers who have now had their social security numbers and all of their personal data leaked onto the dark web. You know, it's probably, I don't know if it's just out there for anybody to get or if you got to go buy it from a data broker, but there has been some sort of a hack of AT&T systems. They confirmed that a data set containing AT&T specific information was leaked onto the dark web about 2 weeks ago. The communications giant is currently investigating to pinpoint whether the data originated directly from AT&T or whether somebody hacked one of their vendors to get it. I live in Noblesville, Indiana. It is a big deal here. Renting parking spaces for $100 to $1,000. Holy jeez. Wow, that's insane. Maybe I'm just like, you know, I'm not getting the big picture here or something, guys. I mean, I don't understand. I don't understand. Yes, I am. Yeah. Hold on. Let's go ahead and check this out here real quick. I want to see this. Are they advertising for $1,000 parking spaces? I know there's obviously certain places in the country where it's like it's a better view. So they are advertising, clearly, Hamilton County. Plan your eclipse visit. Huh. I guess. I mean, I suppose, you know, it only comes every now and then. And they gotta make their money however they possibly can. That's crazy. And thank you very much for that. You guys are the best. Appreciate it. Also, Shanja says, I was driving a New York State thruway today. Electronic signs were saying eclipse 4/8, arrive early, stay late. And then you dropped a can. So thank you very much. Also, thank you to Porpoiseful. So this is obviously concerning, and it makes me wonder if there is such a thing as security surrounding your personal data any longer. If your information has ever been put into anybody's system, chances are pretty good that it's been stolen at least once. It's also been leaked at least once. I do have experience. Honey, would you bring me some Pepto-Bismol? I'm suddenly having heartburn. But you know, the scary part is that they can't fix the problem if they don't know where the data arises from. If it came from their own systems, they probably already think that their systems are super secure. But AT&T does a lot of business with a lot of sub-vendors who are also going to require access to personal data like your social security number. Chances are pretty likely that it's even possible it came from multiple sources. Glynette, good to see you, Glynette. She says, great guest this past weekend. Glad to catch you live. By the way, if you donated at OB, they sell your plasma to the EU. What is OB? If you donate, you're talking about blood. They sell your plasma to the EU. No, I haven't donated blood in a long time. I'm not real comfortable with the idea of needles going in my arms, and I have to get blood work done probably twice a year. So that's the only time I let them take my blood. Yeah, Old Saucy says never donate blood. No. They took my blood. I had to do blood work, and so they took it. I wasn't comfortable with that either, but I had to. My doctor's orders. All right, so AT&T has taken some proactive actions. They've got a comprehensive probe going on to determine exactly where the data was taken from. They're taking a look at both in-house and third-party cybersecurity experts to see if one group is able to find it and the other one can't, then, you know, they've got their bases covered. But they're saying that it looks likely. LKW Cross and Two Feathers, thank you very much for the donations over there at Ko-Fi. I really appreciate it, guys. They say it looks like the data is coming it was stolen from either 2019 or earlier. So if you're a recent AT&T customer, then it's possible that you may not be included in this data leak. I'm pretty sure that AT&T would be honor bound to send you a notification or something like that if your information was stolen. Serter says, I heard somewhere that they have a backdoor into your processors and all of our tech. Yeah, I actually talked about that last week. Every single processor, whether it's Apple or Intel, the CIA has a backdoor into all of it. They force those backdoors, and there's no way for us to avoid it. I mean, the only thing that you can do is to take your computer offline, but then, you know, a lot of the things on it are not going to work. There's just no way to protect your data. And obviously, a general hacker is not going to have access to that. But certainly the government does. And so they can go into your computers at any time. Even if your phones are off, they can still get in there and activate your camera and your microphone. So quite literally, we're living in a Big Brother Oceania type dystopian nightmare future right now. Gosh. So AT&T also, however, I mean, despite the fact that 73 million people's social security numbers ended up online, they're saying that there's no evidence to suggest an unauthorized breach of their systems leading to this leak. I don't know if that's scarier or more comforting, because if there's no evidence of a breach, then that means either they don't know how the people were able to breach them, so it's a significant security vulnerability, or it means that someone working at AT&T with access to all of that personal customer information, that confidential information, for some reason decided to leak all of it out there onto the dark web or to sell it to data brokers out there on the dark web. So they have reached out to the affected parties, so I suppose if you have not gotten an email, you may be okay. But 73 million contacts is a lot of people. And they are offering complimentary credit monitoring services, which is pretty much what everyone does. But here's the thing. Just because your information was stolen and wasn't used during that free 1 year where they were giving you the free credit monitoring doesn't mean that it's not going to be used later on, because your social security number doesn't change. Your birthday doesn't change. So this is a really good argument for people to do two-factor authentication on anything that is requiring your personal data, your banking, your credit cards, you know, put in some kind of a hold on your credit as well. That will effectively stop anybody from opening up credit accounts in your name. I have somebody who is not me, but they have the same name, and they have used portions of my personal information to open up lines of credit. I got a call the other day about a car they were trying to repossess. And I was like, nope, that's definitely not me. I mean, I pay my debts and I don't even have any debts and I've never bought that kind of a car before. But, you know, they don't believe you. They don't believe you at first. And so now my information is forever linked to this guy. Like, you know, it's in a police database. They were like, you know, 99% surety that this person is the same as this person. And so, you know, I get a lot of calls for people who are screwing around using my data. But I have a hold on my credit, and so they can't get a new car or a credit card or anything in my name. So that makes me feel just a little bit better. Mustard for heartburn? Really? Really? Huh. I just ate a sandwich with some mustard on it, but maybe not 2 tablespoons worth. All right, so a lot of people for years now, they've been asking this question right here. When are the guilty going to pay for what they did to the world when it comes to these clot shot death? I guess, yeah, death bundles, we'll just call them. These poisonous biological weapons, which have all of the hallmarks of a biological weapon. They also have an almost random sampling of people that they affect. You may get one of these clot shots and be totally fine. However, you may get a clot shot and you may find yourself very, very ill. You know, like I have family who have been dealing with cancer pretty much ever since they got the clot shot, and just keeps coming back over and over and over again. And I know that so many other people are dealing with the same thing. And every time I hear somebody like my age, oh, you've got a aggressive cancer, super cancer. Doctor says I don't have long to live. Well, you know, did you get the shot? Because that's the only thing that makes any sense to me. I mean, I know there's a lot of poisons out there in the world. I know we eat food largely that is not natural and that has all kinds of things in it, which is going to make us sick. But, you know, this aggressive cancer scare is something rather new. And these COVID-19 clot shots have done a lot of damage all around the world. Well, we've got 5 doctors and medical staff now who are under investigation in Italy because a student died following getting one of these clot shots. So it looks like we may see some accountability. Now, obviously, this is Italy. It's not the United States of America. But a precedent can be shown. And if the type of clot shot that she received in this other country is the same one that's available here in the United States of America, well, you know, put 2 and 2 together. So this Italian public prosecutor has now put these 5 doctors and medical staff under investigation because an 18-year-old girl died after receiving the AstraZeneca COVID-19 clot shot. She went to an open day event in Genoa, Italy on the 25th of May, and while she was there, she got vaccinated. She died very shortly there afterwards on the 18th of June. And this was in 2021. Now, in the autopsy, they found that she did not have any previous medical conditions. She had not taken any medication, and they concluded that it was likely that she died from blood clots as a result of getting the COVID vaccine. So now the doctors are under investigation. Her death, obviously at such a young age, you know, brilliant, beautiful young woman, vibrant, full of life. It actually had stopped the AstraZeneca's vaccines as a result of her death. They stopped the AstraZeneca vaccines because they were concerned about the possibility of blood clots and also other side effects. But despite that, they ended up resuming them in May of the same year because they had a recommendation that it preferably should be used for people over the age of 60. I guess they figure that when you're over the age of 60, if you get a blood clot, well, that's not our problem. Certainly wasn't our fault. But at the time, the government of Italy was pushing, as so many other governments around the world were doing as well, to get as many people jabbed up as possible. So some Italian regions also had these open day events where they gave the AstraZeneca vaccine away to anybody over 18. And obviously, this young woman got the clot shot and she died, and they figured it out that it was that. So here's the reason why they're holding these events. Allegedly, they were aimed at preventing AstraZeneca doses from going to waste because so many people understandably canceled their vaccination appointments after they got reports of the blood clot side effects. So let me just repeat that for you. They were aware that these AstraZeneca vaccines posed a dangerous risk of fatal blood clotting in people who received them. People, once they learned that, very, very understandably said, you know what? It's not worth it. I don't want to take an AstraZeneca vaccine, and I don't want to take any clot shot at all because I like my life. Okay? I love my family. I got a lot of work to do here yet. I'm not trying to die. I'm not trying to get a blood clot. Die at the age of 18. So they had all this stock and they had already paid for it. They figured, well, if we can't sell it, we might as well give it away. And if they've got insurance, we'll go ahead and bill them for it. So it sounds like at the end of the day, this was all about money. So this young woman died because they wanted to make the money. That's how little you mean to them. Human life means absolutely nothing to these people. Do no harm. That is the motto of the medical establishment. However, it doesn't mean anything to them. It means nothing. It's just words, just letters forming sounds in your mouth. It means nothing. So the moral of the story is this young woman did not have to die. And I have to wonder how many people who received free AstraZeneca COVID shots in Italy and around the world, after the knowledge was publicized widely that blood clotting and death was an issue, how many people died specifically as a result of that? And how many of those deaths did the medical establishment and the governments of the Western world chalk that up to as another COVID death? I don't know that it's possible for us to figure out how many people fall into that category. But we can tell you that this young girl, this 18-year-old girl whose whole life was ahead of her, had no medical conditions. She was on no medication. She was healthy. She was happy. And then after getting the clot shot, she was full of clots. Serter says, what about the shedding that talked about? I haven't heard a lot about that lately. Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of people have a short attention span, man. You know, I think about this all the time. Lisa thinks about every time we are around people who have been jabbed, we have side effects. We can see things. We know how our bodies work. I pay very close attention to myself, and so does she. So I think it's still a problem. It's still going on. I mean, I think back, you know, a couple of years ago, I remember asking, I think it was hold on just a second. Dr. Zelenko. I think we asked Dr. Zelenko, you know, how long can we expect this shedding to continue occurring? And I mean, I think he and Sherry Tenpenny, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, might have even asked Peter McCullough. Yeah, everyone seems to think like 3 to 5 years. So, you know, we're coming up on, you know, our fourth year now soon. Well, it was like late 2020, early 2021 when the vaccines became widely available. So, you know, let's give it, you know, just about 3 years. Either people are going to die, and I think we're seeing a lot of that, or they're just going to get sick and they're just going to continue shedding. You know, I think that everybody, most people out there who probably took this stuff, I mean, they're kind of used to just feeling, you know, not good all the time. Like, that's just your general state of being. think of that. It's the same for a lot of people. You know, you get old, your body starts falling apart. Things don't work as well as they used to. But I can tell. I can definitely tell. Cherokee Skies says the same thing. Sick after my aunt's funeral for a week now. Every time I'm around a crowd, damn it. Yeah, yeah, that is true. That is true. Lulu, what's up? You just said my name, Zach. Did you say something earlier? No, doesn't look like it. Yeah, so Spike Protein says, I suffer from fatigue and even unusually vivid dreams after being exposed to shedding from the COVID jabs. Zach, not true at all. I'm getting better. Lulu, I don't know what you're replying to. Oh, are you saying you were jabbed? Oh, okay. Let me be very clear here. As I said at the opening, there is no like uniformity of symptoms in people who have gotten jabs. You know, some people got them, they got sick, and obviously, you know, they got better. They didn't die. I don't think everybody who gets the jab ends up having a heart issue or getting blood clots or dying or anything like that. But we are seeing increased cases of it. If you did get jabbed, no, Zach, I'm getting better with age. All right. Well, I'm glad. That's good. And also, let me be clear, not everybody starts falling apart as they get older. There's plenty of people who get older and they start paying more attention to their body and they get in better shape. I'm just saying, you know, I'm saying in the segment of people who are sick, it's very easy for people to see aging and, you know, the sort of degradation of the body as going along with each other. But good. I'm glad you're doing good, Lulu. Oh, gosh. Okay. Real quick, Jim Kyle says, my wife's stepson died 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks at the age of because of heart attack. My wife's stepson. Okay, so he died 2 weeks ago because of a heart attack. How old was he, Jim? Good God, I am so sorry to hear that. Oh, man. Andre, hey, buddy. He says, I thank God every day I'm still healthy after the jab. God, you and me both, bro. You and me both. See, you may have gotten one of the placebo doses. You know, I mean, like, and this is what makes it so difficult to, like, pin anything down. You know, what can we say? You have people who definitely have, like, some sort of chronic fatigue from it. People who are just kind of generally sick after it. You have some people who have heart issues afterwards. You have some people who have blood clot issues afterwards. You have some people who have, you know, brain disorders afterwards. I mean, like, the range of possible side effects are just so broad. And then you got people who took it and they're totally fine. No big deal. But yes, when Lisa and I are around people who I definitely know have gotten jabbed, we have symptoms. We both have symptoms. So this is a really, really sad story. And it just goes to show you that the pain, the suffering that the world has gone through, it goes back to the love of money, as I said previously, and everybody reminded me in the chat. The love of money. They wanted to get that payout, and so they didn't care what happened to you. Now, a couple of years ago, I made a video kind of, you know, just, you know, giving a critique of my own on Dan Bongino and Tucker Carlson, because it was like at the same time they both kind of came out and said, you know, this was a bad idea. We shouldn't have, you know, supported it, or maybe we should have said something earlier. And I was like, you know, great. I'm happy to hear that. I will accept that anybody come out, you know, but I'm not going to lie. I was a little salty at both of them because I felt like, you know, they were two of the largest like conservative voices out there. A lot of people listen to Dan. A lot of people listen to Tucker. I think even more people listen to Tucker now. And I know a lot of people still listen to Dan. You know, I was disgusted by the people who made fun of who made fun of these guys. Number one, Dan Bongino, people made fun of him for getting jabbed. You know, he got advice from his doctor. OK, that was, you know, he had cancer. He was listening to his doctor. I can't fault him for that. You know, but I feel like there were people, and not only these guys, but there were people who had a much larger platform than me or anybody else that I know. And they just stayed silent. And I ask myself, you know, why is that? Because I feel like they likely, you know, were seeing the same stuff as us, right? You know, they saw people getting sick. They saw people, you know, dying. They saw people having all kinds of side effects, you know, kids having heart attacks and just dropping dead. So why was it that more people didn't say anything? You know, and I'm not saying that Dan Bongino or Tucker Carlson are bad people. You can think whatever you want about them. I'm not going to say that they're bad people. But I know that people made decisions based upon their paycheck. And that's just difficult for me sometimes to reconcile. I understand that, you know, you got to do what's right for you, I suppose. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to look at yourself in the mirror. And now that Tucker is, you know, out there working for himself, he's basically said everything that I think he should have said when he was still working for Fox News. I don't know what their contracts looked like, though. I don't know if they could have gotten sued for speaking honestly. And I'll probably never know. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. But I will forever stand my ground on the idea that, you know, if you have some sort of knowledge about something or even a suspicion, that it's just, it is noble to stand up and say something. So, you know, Tucker is definitely saying stuff now, and I just want to give him props as a result of that. So he did an interview, I guess, on the Jimmy Dore show. I haven't seen it. You know, I know Jimmy is – it's been interesting to watch his sort of awakening because he was a rabid leftist. He's still a leftist, but he got the clot shot, and he got super sick, and he never really recovered. So he's definitely out there. He's been saying stuff for a long time now. Let's see, Spike. These people stayed silent because they wanted to maintain their big platforms. Yes, it's true. I prefer people with smaller platforms like Zach who speak the truth. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. But no, that is true, you know. And you know, people got mad at me. People got mad at me for saying Dan Bongino should have spoken up. But, you know, I don't mean any offense. I'm just trying to be honest here. I'm just trying to be honest. I knew I was going to get kicked off of freaking YouTube. I was like, there's no way. There's no way I can talk about this stuff and maintain this platform. But I can't look myself in the mirror at the end of the day and feel comfortable about who I am if I don't say this, if I don't talk about this stuff. It was so important. And it still is important. So anyways, the mission continues onward. So Tucker Carlson, God bless him. Glad you're out there, Tuck. He called on tens of thousands of doctors who pushed the jab and all of those other COVID-related lies. I think that, you know, and I always go back to this. If it wasn't for the fact that so many of these people stayed silent with, based upon their own financial interests, and I'm looking at you, medical community, okay? It was all nurses that were coming forward, a handful of doctors, but it was the nurses. It was the mama bears. They were the ones who was coming forward. But all of the radical leftists who are just like blindly allegiant, following along, goose-stepping behind the Biden regime, they were perfectly comfortable to just say, safe and effective, safe and effective. Rah! Safe and effective, safe and effective. Like freaking mina birds, just over and over and over again. Do you guys remember when I was on Twitch? And that leftist used to call into the – there was a couple of them because it was Twitch. And there's a bunch of loonies over there. But there was this guy in New York that would frequently call into the show. And he was so angry every single time. Like, how dare you talk about the COVID jab like this? And he was like, you know, I actually had a couple of conversations with him. I thought it was pretty interesting because I just knew I was just sending him to the moon every time he heard me. But he was telling us – about how, he was making an argument, you know, like, why wouldn't you just get the shot? And I'm like, why would I get the shot? Okay, like, it's not going to protect me from getting COVID. It's not going to make me any better. It's just an unnecessary medical treatment. Like, there are other established medical treatments out there that I feel are a lot safer. And because it's my body, my choice, I'm not going to get it. He was like, well, nobody ever said you wouldn't get the shot. Nobody ever said you wouldn't get COVID if you didn't take the shot. I got the shot and I still got COVID. And then he was like, And then he was like, I got arthritis from COVID. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. You didn't get arthritis from COVID. You got the arthritis from the shot. I was like, tell me. Why is it you believe that it's more likely you got arthritis from COVID than from getting a commercially produced mRNA genetic manipulation therapy injected into your body? Why do you think that that is? You know, I said COVID has been around since time immemorial, okay? It's just it's the cold. This may be a different version of it, but not a single person, nobody, never in the history of mankind has somebody gotten the cold and then gotten arthritis as a result. But you know what? You know what I have heard? I have heard a ton of people getting the clot shot and then developing crippling arthritis and joint pains all over the place. But this guy, nah, it's from, he's like, I'm healthier now, but you got arthritis. Well, you know, at least I'm not going to get COVID. Okay. Oh my God. I couldn't believe it. Anyways, he quit calling it. I think Lisa blocked him one night because he was so freaked out every time. Mm. And then there was the Joe the Communist Plumber. Do you anybody here remember him? Oh, Evan Sayette hung up because this dude wouldn't shut up. I was trying to cut him off, and then Evan just hung up, and I was like, Joe, you're banned. Oh, Serter says, they sounded like the news segments in the movie, the Kentucky Fried Movie, if you've seen it. Mrs. Heading to New York News and Film at 11. It's been a long time since I've seen the Kentucky Fried Movie, but believe me, we used to watch it all the time when I was in high school. The same people did like Airplane. Didn't they do that? Anyways, getting back to the story. Before I get arthritis from COVID over here. I think what's so interesting is that doctors who clearly can read, I mean, they're literate by definition. They're not stupid by definition, you hope. Think that's true. They're smart. Look at the evidence and fundamentally everything they said about the vax, and it has hurt a lot of people. And some doctors, the three that you mentioned, and they're great, but there are tens of thousands of doctors in the United States, and why aren't they standing up and saying, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I can't believe I recommended it. I mean, that's a valid question. Valid question. Thank God my doctor was totally based and he was not a jabber. He says, I mean, I endorsed the Iraq war in 2003. Tucker used to be just a disgusting warmonger neocon. Buck Wayne says, I don't trust doctors. One asked me to sign a form. He reached in his pocket and pulled out a thermometer and said, damn it, some asshole has my pen. Do your research. That's a good one. I like that. Esther G says, hello, Pilled family. I've missed you all so much. Good to see you. Filter Dog One, thank you for the can as well. Yes, Tucker used to be a real warmonger. But, you know, he realized he was wrong and he's felt bad about it for 20 years. In fact, it was 20 years ago this week that I went to Iraq and I felt bad about it ever since then. And every opportunity I've apologized, not to please other people, but to maintain my dignity and self-respect. I mean, that is a prerequisite. If you hurt someone unintentionally, you have to say, I'm sorry. And I can't believe that 99% of American doctors don't do that. I'm not going to them, by the way. I would never go to a doctor who was still lying about COVID because that is a dangerous and immoral person. And he's right. Chances are that you may be going to a doctor who totally doesn't give two shits about you, who may have recommended the COVID-19 clot shot, who may have even taken it themselves, or maybe even worse, knew not to take it themselves and still recommended it to their patients. Do me a favor. I want you guys to ask your doctors, like ask them, did you recommend the COVID clot shot? You know, and maybe go out and find a doctor who didn't recommend the COVID clot shot. So last month, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention downgraded the severity of COVID to the same status as the flu, calling it a unified approach to treating such conditions. So after several years of lying to America and the world, pretending like people were dropping dead in the millions, they've now admitted that COVID is no worse than the common flu. Really, at the end of the day, especially if you have effective medication, which is going to address the root causes of it. However, we still must use the common sense solutions we know work to protect ourselves and others from serious illness, from respiratory viruses. This includes vaccination, treatment, and staying home when we get sick. That's from CDC Director Dr. Mandy Cohen. Dr. Cohen, thank you very much for nothing. All right, I want to talk about race. I want to talk about race because we've got a couple of interesting stories about racism in America, systemic racism. And another stalwart institution is being accused of systemic racism. That would be University of California at Berkeley. Now, are they discriminating against the black and brown people of America? No, my friends. It's exactly the opposite. They have allegedly banned white people from a California community farm that is co-owned by the university. That sounds to me like they want to keep all the brownies on the farms, okay? The white people are not allowed to go there. Let me actually play you guys a video that is a favorite of mine. This is from Ryan Long, Ryan Long Comedy. And it just goes to show that these new anti-white, I guess, equity champions are basically the same as good old-fashioned Ku Klux Klanners. Let's take a listen.
When me and Brad first met, I didn't think we'd get along, but turns out we kind of agree on everything. Your racial identity is the most important thing. Everything should be looked at through the lens of race.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke. Damn. We both have a lot of opinions about people of color, even though we barely know any.
I say colored people, but as long as we're classifying them, we both think minorities are a united group who think the same and act the same.
And vote the same. You don't want to lose your black card.
Sorry, I don't know. I just think we should roll back discrimination
law so we can hire based on race again.
Jinx, now you owe me a Coke. Hey, tell them what you told me yesterday.
White actors should only do voices for white cartoon characters.
I've been saying that for years. Stick to your own.
Us white people, we have so much privilege.
I agree. It is a privilege to be white.
Ask him about interracial dating.
All I said is that black men who date white women have internalized racism, and white men that date ethnic women are fetishizing them.
Guy's against interracial dating now. Like, am I being pranked? Did Boomer put you up to this?
Ugh, you know that taco place is white-owned?
White people should be making white foods, like Kraft macaroni and cheese. No seasoning, not even salt.
It's like he's a mind reader. I mean, I've been pushing for segregation forever, and my man does what?
I created an improv comedy show exclusively for ethnic people.
Guy segregates comedy on my birthday.
White people need to stop wearing dreadlocks, and they need to stop appropriating black people's music.
Shaved heads and country music, the way God intended.
You know all white people are racist.
I'm listening.
Even if you have a black wife or a black friend group, you're still really racist.
You know, we just kicked a guy out of the organization for having a black girlfriend, but if you can promise me he's still really racist, we'll consider letting him back in.
Black people should only shop at black businesses.
I guess the only thing we really disagree about is I think white people are the root of all evil.
But what did I tell you, though? If we can narrow that down to a certain group of tiny-hatted white people, I think we can come to an understanding.
Technically, I don't consider Jewish people white.
Neither do I.
Oh. When you think about it, woke people and racist people are exactly the same. They want to segregate. They want to base everything on the color of your skin. They want black people to only support black people, and they want white people to only support white people. It's all the same. These people have the exact same values. So the wokes are actually racist. And, you know, good old-fashioned racists are also actually racist. And so this lawsuit, well, it's not a lawsuit, but this claim is about the University of California systemically treating white people in the way that they say that white people treat black people. So this is the Gill Tract Community Farm. UC Berkeley is a co-owner of it, but they have banned white people from their farm on Saturdays. This is the designated segregated Black, Indigenous, and People of Color Day. This is the BIPOC Day. No whites allowed. Serter says the homeless who migrated from there to SoCal when I was homeless called it Berkeley, California. Oh, that's so funny. That's great. So there has been a complaint filed with the United States Department of Education by the Mountain States Legal Foundation, and they criticize this move to segregate whites from blacks as systemic racism, which it actually is. So on the website, it says the UC Guild Tract Community Farm is a collaborative community project between the University of California, Berkeley, and the local community. It's focused on issues of food justice. Food justice doesn't just warm the cockles of your heart. And urban farming. Why they gotta always bring black into it? It's located in Albany, California, at the corner of San Pablo Avenue and Marin Avenue. It's an urban farm where you can come and harvest food yourself and your family in exchange for help with weeding, planting, and watering. Get out there into the fields. It also hosts a sliding scale farm stand and partners with several East Bay community organizations and food pantries to distribute fresh organic produce to those who lack access to it. Now, the general counsel for the Mountain States Legal Foundation was talking to the New York Post, and he said, UC Berkeley thinks that racial segregation is progressive now, but it's no different than segregation of the past. Their complaint includes an email from a farm program manager telling somebody Saturdays are exclusively BIPOC. Exceptions have only been made for events that are BIPOC centered and with plenty of advance notice and planning. I mean, they love to say white fragility, but it seems like the people who try to segregate the various communities of the United States, they're the ones who are the most fragile because they have to plan in advance if there's going to be a person with a little less melanin in their skin walking through that farm stand. Oh, shield your eyes, child. You don't want to see the whitey. Your eyes are going to burn out of your skull. So, you know, as part of a public education institution, segregation is illegal. And, you know, it didn't suddenly change just because they decided to segregate in a different way. And now we've got a couple of decades removed from the integration of the United States of America. Did everybody know that Martin Luther King Jr. Day, it was going to be at one time called Integration Day? Because it was really segregating the integration of blacks and whites and, well, people of color and whites into general society. They got rid of whites and colored only counters and bathrooms and, you know, only black stores. I mean, everything that the United States did to make the colorblindness take over society has been rolled back by these woke leftist agendas that have been implemented all around the country. Serter says they want to get the black community to segregate themselves and smile while they are doing it. Yeah. I think that this is a trick by the elite to convince America to go back to a system of segregation. It certainly makes it easier for them because, you know, they'll be happily involved in their own little, corner of the ivory tower. Meanwhile, the rest of the nation, you know, we have to break it up. You know, Wednesdays and Fridays are blacks only. Mondays and Tuesdays are whites only. Saturdays and Sundays are Hispanics only. And Asians, well, you know, we don't let them come around at all anymore. So the UC Berkeley told the Post they were not aware of the discrimination complaint until they were contacted about this story. And they said the anonymous texts attached to the complaint have no specific information about time or place, even though it said Saturdays, and it names the farm directly. As you can see, the Guild Tracks website and calendar make no mention whatsoever of any program or activity of the sort described in the complaint. Well, I think what somebody could do is a Project Veritas style undercover investigation, wear a little pinhole camera on your shirt, go there on a Saturday and see if you get spit on or called a cracker. And if you get told that you're not supposed to be there because it's BIPOC only day. But obviously UC Berkeley is not going to cop to this. But it looks like the Minnesota Public School District may have copped to something along these lines as well. They're looking for an assistant superintendent who can examine the presence of whiteness. What does that mean? Does that mean just like standing in the hallways of a public school and taking a check every single time a person that's white walks by? Well, I don't know. If you live in the St. Louis area and you want to apply to be this new assistant superintendent, you might want to take a look at this job posting. It says they're looking for a candidate who can actively listen for both spoken and unspoken racial concerns and examine the presence and role of whiteness in systems and structures. Whiteness. They also must be open to feedback regarding their own racial blind spots and seek multiple racial perspectives while also fostering joy and cultivate a culture of accountability for systemic racial equity transformation. So that means you must be ready to scold the white children of the St. Louis Public School District and make sure they remember the 400 years of blood, sweat, and tears that they had nothing to do with. Number one Indian dad says, I have a white privilege card. I've had it for a few years. I got it from the Hodge Twin site, but the card says official joelpatrick.com. MAGA, MOHAP, FJB. Glenette says, Dr. Simone Gold is offering gold care. You should ask her to come on your show. I will definitely. I've always wanted to have Simone Gold on the show, and I was actually going to, and then she had to go to prison for a little bit. All right. So Alpha News notes that this position, dig this, man. Would you be willing to tattle on your own race for this much money? Has quite the annual salary, $134,141. That's the floor. It goes up to $201,212. I mean, all you got to do is show up and say, hey, I'll take accountability. I'm willing to take accountability if you can just sign that check over to me. They're also going to have a significant influence on how the school district operates. Certainly, I think that this is not a position where they're looking for anyone who isn't a person of color to fill it. They're definitely going to be looking for somebody who's going to feel comfortable assigning blame for everything that didn't happen to them and only likely happened to their ancestors. So, what is this? I just got, oh, okay. I understand now. All right. So, I don't know how this is even going to work, but here is the full job posting here. Racially conscious, equity work, racial equity, racial consciousness, racial equity, racial equity, racial equity. But you got to comply with state and federal laws, so it can't be about race, actually, at the end of the day. But, you know, you're going to be doing a lot of things. You're doing, you're principling, you're looking for efficient and cost-effective management resources. You got to direct and coordinate, manage staff, research, assess, interpret, examine the presence of whiteness, insanity. This cannot go on forever, okay? This has to be addressed here at some point in the very near future. Listen, guys, we have to take a break for the second half of the show. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, bad news. It sounds like the... Oops. Okay. Hold on. I got to fix something. This didn't work right. Warnings of a recession are growing louder as we near sell in May and go away. Citibank warned, the soft landing dream is over. The U.S. economy is headed for a recession in the middle of 2024. Morgan Stanley warns, a U.S. dollar regime shift could threaten stocks. And meanwhile, the Fed's most trusted recession indicator is flashing code red. Because every recession since 1945 has been preceded by a yield curve inversion. Meanwhile, the M2 money supply is meaningfully contracting for only the fifth time since 1870. All signs appear to point to a sizable downturn for the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ. Now, meanwhile, gold prices have been hitting all-time highs, and the rally is far from over. Now, y'all know silver is always late to the party, but once it finds momentum, it can easily outperform gold. So protect your retirement with gold or place a bullish bet on silver. Call the proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today before it's too late. Just mention Red Pill 78 and this show, Red Pill News, and you're always going to get best-in-class service from Patriots protecting Patriots. Patriot Gold Group has the no-fee for life IRA, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you just might be eligible for that no fee for life IRA on qualifying rollovers. So give them a call today at 888 888- 857-6092 and get your free investor guide today. Patriot Gold Group is a Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row. Call them today at 888-857-6092. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right, welcome back. 315 Russ says, if I were to take that job, would I have to pledge my allegiance to the BIPOC Führer? I think that you could probably say whatever you wanted. And honestly, I mean, why not work to take down the system from the inside? I feel like that would be something worthwhile. All right. Well, it was inevitable. We got to talk about the backlash from the International Trans Day of Visibility. Now, clearly, we were not the only ones who were upset about this announcement. It seemed to be a major slap in the face to Christians and people of faith all around the world, anybody who believes in the return of Christ. So the White House was forced to respond to that Christian backlash and, of course, the backlash from the GOP. Now, they did not apologize, and the messaging has been a little bit mixed. So they put out this notification just before Easter to make sure that everybody was aware that it was no longer about the return of Jesus. It was now about recognizing trans people, even though trans people are one of the most recognizable groups in the United States right now, and they get a lot of attention as a result. Now, therefore, I, Joseph R. Biden Jr., President of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me, on proclaim that here on March 31st, 2024, it's Transgender Day of Visibility. This was the official announcement coming from the White House. I wonder when they're going to name it something not white now, White House. He said, I call upon all Americans to join us by lifting up the lives and voices of transgender people throughout our nation and to work toward eliminating violence and discrimination based on gender identity. Now, what about the discrimination and violence against people who identify like I do as a straight white male? I mean, nobody ever says anything about us. I suppose that after so long of just the generalized repression of the peoples of the world by, of course, no one other than white men, then they look at it as a happy trade-off, right? Nothing wrong with the discrimination of one group over another, even though the history of the world is a series of tales of stronger people subjugating weaker people. You've got kingdoms conquering kingdoms and people slaughtering people and different races taking slaves. I mean, this largely doesn't exist anymore unless you go to Libya. We came, we saw, he died. Thank you very much, Hillary Clinton. But Biden said that, of course, he's a devout Catholic. So why, as a devout Catholic, did he and the rest of the crew at the White House ban all religious artwork from the White House Easter egg competition? Now, this is an absurd gesture in the notice coming from Joe Biden. Joe Biden is not really a Catholic. He's like one of those hangers-on who just likes to invoke the name of God every now and then when it suits him. Clearly, Joe Biden doesn't believe in anything other than perhaps his goddess, Michelle Obama, Mohab. So the Trump campaign issued this statement. It is appalling and insulting that Joe Biden's White House prohibited children from submitting religious Easter egg designs for their Easter art event and formally proclaimed Easter Sunday as Trans Day of Visibility. Sadly, these are just two more examples of the Biden regime's years-long assault on the Christian faith. We call on Joe Biden's failing campaign and White House to issue an apology to the millions of Catholics and Christians across America who believe tomorrow is for one celebration and one celebration only, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Well, on Saturday evening, the White House responded to the outrage that Christians all around America were rightfully feeling. They claimed that it was cruel and hateful. How dare you not worship at the altar of Baphomet? White House spokesperson Andrew Bates said, as a Christian who celebrates Easter with his family, President Biden stands for bringing people together and upholding the dignity and freedoms of every American. Sadly, it's unsurprising that politicians are seeking to divide and weaken our country with cruel, hateful, and dishonest rhetoric. President Biden will never abuse his faith for political purposes or for profit. Really didn't address much of anything at all, but again, you're the problem. How dare you be offended by something so offensive? Now, what's even stranger is that this proclamation was written and signed by one Joseph R. Biden Jr. He's called the president, but he's, as we know, the resident. So why is it then that Joe Biden, when questioned about this Trans Day of Visibility, denied ever signing this proclamation? I mean, it is April 1st, and so I may forgive you if you think maybe this is just a big chuckle. Giggle, giggle, snort, Trans Day of Visibility, what the heck is that? But Democrats have, for a long time now, given us a lot of hints that maybe Joe Biden is not the one in charge. I think Joe Biden has given us a fair number of hints as well. And you may believe that it's even more likely after hearing this. But he was asked about proclaiming Easter Sunday as the Trans Day of Visibility, and he just denied it. He said, "Didn't happen, Jack." He said, "I didn't do that." He was speaking with Real Clear Politics' Philip Wegman. Philip Wegman asked him about it. He asked about Speaker Johnson's claim, rightfully so, because there's a freaking proclamation from the White House. And Joe Biden said he's thoroughly uninformed. Well, I mean, you can go to the White House, you can see the press release, and you can hear all about it. I mean, they were proclaiming it all day. Trans Day of Visibility. It's not Easter Sunday. It's Trans Day of Visibility. But Joe Biden says it didn't happen. How can those two things be true at the same time? Now, Karine Jean-Pierre doubled down, and she actually said it's misinformation that Biden declared Easter Sunday as the Transgender Day of Visibility. Karine, I know you're stupid, but we've got the proclamation. We've got the goods. It's called the sauce, Karine. Jim Kyle says, did I miss something that notes given to certain people at Bush's funeral? Did it ever come out? No, it never came out what was in those letters. No. And I don't know that we're ever going to find out what they are, but it would be awesome if we did. Let's take a listen here. I don't know how Karine Jean-Pierre is going to rationalize this, because we all saw it. It had Joe Biden's signature on it. And, we're not living in the Mandela effect when it comes to this one.
So the criticism over the Transgender Day of Visibility, the White House said that the president wouldn't abuse his faith for political purposes. Does the president think that's what Republicans are doing?
I mean, look, just a couple of things. And really so surprised by the misinformation that's been out there around this. And I want to be very clear. Every year for the past several years, on March 31st, Transgender Day of Visibility is marked. And as we know, for folks who understand the calendar and how it works, Easter falls on different Sundays, right? Every year. And this year, it happened to coincide with Transgender Visibility Day. And so that is the simple fact. That is what has happened. That is where we are. And I do want to say a couple of things, because I think it's important here, as you just stated in your questions, what we've been hearing out there, a lot of misinformation done on purpose. And as a Christian who celebrates Easter with family, President Biden stands for bringing people together and upholding the dignity and freedoms of every American. Now, sadly, and it's not surprising, right? It is actually unsurprising that politicians are seeking to divide and weaken our country with cruel, hateful, and dishonest rhetoric. It is dishonest what we have heard the past 24 hours. It is untrue what we heard over the weekend.
So if it's untrue, then why do we have this special proclamation for that? Why didn't Joe Biden wish everyone a happy Easter? He didn't. He said, nah, It's Transgender Day of Visibility. She just said that everybody knows it's the last day of March. I didn't know that. If it was already Transgender Day of Visibility, then why did he need to proclaim it again, especially when he could have just said Happy Easter? I don't know. His HHS secretary, Ms. Rachel Levine, he's a big dude, released a video on Easter celebrating the Transgender Day of Visibility. Again, this was designed to elicit the very response that it did. It could have just said, Happy Easter Sunday. He is risen. Oh, by the way, we've got this other thing just happens to fall this year. But no, they made a point to specifically hone in on this thing. He said, on Transgender Day of Visibility, we celebrate the joy, strength, and absolute courage of some of the bravest people I know. Today, we show millions of transgender and non-binary Americans that we see them, they belong, and they should be treated with dignity and respect. And I'm not saying anybody shouldn't be treated with dignity and respect, but there is an agenda at play here, which goes far beyond someone's own personal identity. And after spending Sunday afternoon and evening pushing back against this criticism, the White House put out that official statement from Joe Biden Easter morning. Biden posted about Easter a couple of times on social media, but none of his statements addressed the concerns or the controversies regarding the coinciding of these 2 days together. Or did he mention anything about no religious symbols on Easter on those Easter eggs? So I don't know. Who is the real Joe Biden? And again, who is running the show there? Hang on. Let's see what Rachel Levine's special message says.
Today marks Transgender Day of Visibility. Each year on March 31st, we celebrate transgender Americans and all that they have accomplished. We honor the many contributions transgender Americans make in health, medicine, public service, and across our nation.
Don't forget sports.
At the Department of Health and Human Services, our mission is to improve the health and well-being of all Americans, including transgender Americans. From promoting access to high-quality care, to addressing health disparities, to developing policies that improve reproductive health care, to ensuring transgender youth have access to 988 program counselors with professionals trained to work with them. Achieving health equity is our commitment, a commitment to all. On this Transgender Day of Visibility, we must continue to make focused and ongoing efforts to end inequities, eliminate the impacts of injustice, and improve access to care for everyone. Today of
as long as everyone is paying for it.
Days, I stand proud and visible with my fellow transgender Americans. Happy Transgender Day of Visibility.
You sure about that? You sure about that? You sure about that?
I'm not sure, Rachel. I'm not sure. You know, here's the thing. They want to codify this. First of all, it's a grooming agenda. Okay? It's not just about making people feel comfortable in who they are. There is a number of components, and we've gone over them several times. And when you override the sanctity of Easter Sunday with Transgender Day of Visibility, when basically every single day is Transgender Day of Visibility, you are taking something away from that very special occasion. Fredo says, Rachel Levine played on the same football team as Millie in college. No shit. Did he really? Oh, that's so funny. And what was Rachel Levine's qualifications besides being transgender? I mean, you know, it's obvious that, like, you know, Rachel Levine, all of these people who are joining these sports competitions, all you got to do is throw some lipstick on and grow your hair out and you claim that you're a trans person and you're going to win. I mean, there is a significant disadvantage. I mean, what about all of the women who are being discriminated against as a result of this? All right. And it wouldn't be an average day at the White House if Joe Biden didn't get the opportunity to sniff on some babies. Let's go ahead and take a look at this. That baby is freaking out. Get me away from this pederast. Why? Why are you always whispering in those kids' ears, Joe? That kid is going to rue the day his little brother ever took that photograph. Here's a different angle. It's the worst. It's the worst. Stay back. Oh, God. Boys Blanc, thank you very much for the cookie. All right, and if it wasn't in your face enough, CNN's special Easter message is coming from a blasphemous theologian who claims that God is a black woman. As far as I'm aware, God doesn't have a skin color because God is not a human being. That is a remarkably earthbound trait. I suppose God can appear, if he wanted to, in whatever form he wanted. But this person, Christina Cleveland, said, "When I see the Easter story, I see Jesus being a victim of state-sanctioned violence. I see Jesus surrounded by black and brown people who wish they could do something but had no power in the moment." I'm not too sure about that either.
You sure about that?
If you want to get real technical about it, it was the brown people surrounding Jesus who were demanding his crucifixion. So, I don't know. Pontius Pilate might have made the ultimate decision, but, it really was at the behest of the madness in the crowd. I see people being victims of a system that can't see their full humanity and assumes the worst of them. And yet, there's hope in the end. The universe does bend towards justice, even if the arc is long. T. Sevi says, Transgender Day of Dysfunctionality. Christina Cleveland spent most of her childhood in an evangelical church surrounded by traditional images of a porcelain-skinned and flaxen-haired Jesus. But one day, she came across a portrayal of Jesus that was so astonishing, she gasped. Was Jesus a man of color? Why this question matters more than ever. We don't have anybody from that era. The history of the world is various ethnic groups moving from place to place to place. I would assume that Jesus, having grown up in the Middle East, he had, more of a tan complexion, olive colored complexion. But the Greeks and the Romans, they were fair skinned. There were definitely mixed ethnic groups in there. I'm not so certain that they had many Africans that were living in Judea or in that area. But, there's this whole thing about the black Jesus. And I feel like, any attempt when, we can't see. All right. We don't have access to it. I think, it's, possible to make a likely conclusion. But to dive in one way or the other, I just feel like it's totally off. All right, so one more Easter story to get your sack shrinking. Look at this. This guy showed up at a church, and he set a trailer full of Bibles on fire in front of the church on Easter Sunday. This is coming from Wilson County in Mount Juliet, Tennessee. So police responded, and this was about 6 a.m. And the fire department showed up and extinguished the fire, but then they realized that it was a trailer full of Bibles. Police revealed the trailer of Bibles was left in the middle of the intersection near Global Vision Bible Church and then intentionally set on fire. They didn't reveal the person's gender or race. I wonder if it was difficult to pinpoint exactly which gender or race they were. They told Nashville News 5 that investigators are reviewing the security footage, and they said it appears that the plate belonged to an out-of-state vehicle. Greg Locke is the pastor of this church. He's a big supporter of President Trump. I think I follow him on Twitter. He's made a number of politically incorrect statements regarding Democrats and transgenderism. Serter says the white Jesus was started in the Renaissance by the Medici. The pre-Renaissance were dark skin paintings. Yeah, that just makes more sense to me. And it's kind of a ridiculous argument anyways. But so Locke said in a Facebook post that a security team caught a man dropping off the trailer who then got out, set the trailer of Bibles on fire in front of the church. He also claimed that a woman drove through the night and was able to alert the police quickly. So thank God they were able to get it put out. But I mean, it's quite the statement. It's strange because he had his blinkers on and he scotched the wheels and everything. He was very meticulous, so he had to be very courageous to do what he did. We've had people do things to our building. We've been vandalized a number of times, hence why we have plenty of security, but never 200 Bibles being burnt. That's a pretty rebellious statement toward the church. Hopefully they find this guy because it could have been a lot worse, clearly. All right, so I do have some good news that I wanted to deliver to you guys, and this is about that Arizona rancher who's currently on trial for murder. This is actually really good. If you remember back to January 30th of 2023, we had Arizona rancher George Allen Kelly. He's a 75-year-old man. He was arrested and charged with the murder of an illegal, Gabriel Quen Butima. Quen Butima was crossing the border from his hometown of Nogales, Mexico, with a group of seven other illegal migrants that were donning camouflage, and they were also holding rifles. They had AK-47s. So one of the illegals said the squad of armed men crossed the border into the U.S. to look for work, but, you know, obviously they must have been looking for mercenary work because they're wearing camouflage and carrying AKs. But they scattered when they saw Border Patrol agents. And then shortly afterwards, Kelly, the man who's on trial for murder, became aware of the group. So he was making lunch when he heard a single gunshot and noticed five of the men crossing through his 170-acre ranch along the southern border. He claims he saw one of the men point a rifle at him when he went to his porch to investigate. Kelly responded by firing warning shots with his own rifle above the group's head. But Quen Butima was struck by a bullet that allegedly came from Kelly's rifle. However, responding officers, including local police and Border Patrol, did not initially find Quen Butima's body when they investigated. And it wasn't until later, when Kelly went out to check on his horse, that the body was actually discovered. So Kelly had previously called the police a number of times that day, trying to report these illegals coming through his property, saying they were armed, saying they were trespassing through his property. And the police did not care to respond. But when they found the body and they came back out after the initial call, well, then, of course, they decided to charge him with murder. So the trial began last week in the Santa Cruz Superior Court. Prosecutors had dropped it down to second-degree murder. It initially was first-degree murder. But on Friday, during the trial, a key piece of evidence was revealed to be missing. The bullet that killed Quen Butima was never recovered. So they can't prove that bullet came from Mr. Kelly's rifle. Now, during the testimony of the forensic scientist named Rick Wyant, defense attorney Brianna Larkin asked, so number one, you can't prove who the shooter was, correct? And the forensic scientist answered, that's correct. I can't believe that they put this guy through this. So the actual here's a video of the testimony. Let me see. No, I guess they didn't publish the video itself. They just have an excerpt from it. So she asked, you can't prove the firearm that caused this wound. Is that correct? That's correct. You can't prove which type of ammunition caused this wound. Correct? That's true. You can't prove which bullet caused this wound. Correct? Also true. So you can't prove which direction the shot came from. Correct? Correct. And we can't prove how far away the shot came from other than further than 6 feet away from this person. Correct? Yes. That's true. So in short, without a bullet, forensic experts are unable to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt. I know that maybe the standards for being convicted if you're a white male in America today are not quite the same as they used to be, but they cannot prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this was a bullet that came from Kelly's rifle, that he fired that fatal shot, but it narrows this case down to his word against that of the prosecution's witnesses. And they got a 43-year-old Daniel Ramirez, who's an illegal immigrant coming from Honduras. Now, Ramirez testified on day three of the trial, and he admitted that he had previously smuggled drugs across the border. So it seems to me like he might have a vested interest in ensuring that this guy goes to prison for the rest of his life, because then they're going to have carte blanche. They're going to be able to cross that border into this man's ranch and into his territory as often as they want. They can bring as many drugs as they want, and they will never have to worry about it ever again, because the police certainly don't care. Doesn't seem like it. He also reported he'd attempt to cross the border 8 to 10 times previously, and sure enough, he had been deported multiple times during those attempts. He said it cost him $2,500. He had to pay human smugglers every single time he crossed the border. Now, the wife of Mr. Kelly, his wife of 53 years, Wanda Kelly, she set up a Give Send Go for defense donations after several GoFundMe pages were taken down. I remember when this first started, and I was like, they're going to take that page down. Why don't they set up a Give Send Go? So, he is obviously supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. Looks like they have only raised $19,202 out of the $700,000 that is required. I don't know why it's that high. Well, I guess a lot of people are following the trial on YouTube, apparently. I haven't seen anything from this trial yet, but, you know, then again, I haven't seen anybody covering it, but I hope that they are. And I think that this is key evidence right here. If they can't prove that the bullet came from him, you know, he said, she said, who are you going to believe, an American citizen or an illegal alien who's smuggling drugs across the border? I think it's a done deal. Done deal. All right. So continue to pray for this man. He definitely, definitely needs it. All right. So the cleanup of the Baltimore Bridge collapse, Francis Scott Key Bridge, has begun. And apparently the crane they're using has a history of being used by the CIA. So the U.S. Naval Institute has reported that the Chesapeake, it's the largest crane on the East Coast, has now arrived in the harbor to assist in the efforts of cleaning up the wreckage, which has been left over from the Dolly crashing into the Francis Scott Key Bridge on Friday. According to UNI, the Chesapeake, it was formerly named the Sun 800, was actually built by the CIA to recover the Soviet Gulf II ballistic missile submarine K-129, which sunk back in 1968. Kind of interesting. Maybe the CIA just wants to continue their cleanup operations. The Hughes Glomar Explorer was a deep-sea drillship platform built for Project Azorian. This is the secret 1974 effort by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency's Special Activities Division to recover the Soviet submarine K-129. By conducting Project Azorian, the CIA was able to recover several Soviet crew members who were aboard that sub when it sank. Currently, the Baltimore port is closed. The ones who are navigating the ongoing wreckage cleanup believe it's not going to be months until it gets cleaned up and it reopens full time. So the commanding general of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers told the press regarding the reopening of the port, "I don't think we're talking days. I don't think we're talking months." Oh, my gosh. So they're talking years. They're talking years before this is going to be safe enough to navigate. Well, obviously, pray for the people of Baltimore and pray for the people of the United States, because this is potentially going to be very, very devastating financially for all of us. All right. So got a couple of stories about the border before we get to our stories about Russia. This is, you know, maybe not going to surprise a single one of you, but the El Paso judge who is overseeing the immigration cases of all the illegal immigrants who stormed the border and rioted against the National Guard has just ordered their release on Easter Sunday. El Paso Magistrate Judge Humberto Acosta, he ordered the release of a large group of illegal aliens that were accused of participating in this violent insurrection against the National Guard troops along the Rio Grande. This is the same one that took place on March 21st. It was described as a border riot. Illegal immigrants were predominantly illegal aliens from Venezuela, overwhelmed the security measures there, and they clashed with National Guard forces. And again, y'all got guns for a reason. I think that maybe it's time they start being used, because if this would have been the border between, like, I don't know, Hungary and Poland, I don't think that anybody would have, stopped from using them. I mean, generally, this is what they used to do. You know, somebody comes running across your border, you're getting clipped, son. There's just no way around it. Apparently not now. It's a softer, gentler type of tyranny. So these borders breached, excuse me, these illegal aliens breached the concertina wire. They overwhelmed the National Guard. They made a rush for the border. And for some reason, the judge in this case has ordered that they be released. So according to the New York Post, the National Guard reported the seizure of knives and makeshift weapons from a number of individuals in the disturbance. There was also an instance where an illegal alien attempted to seize a firearm from a soldier. Good God. Several of these soldiers were stationed near Gate 36 on that day. They needed medical attention because they got beat up. They had to get taken to the hospital. So Judge Acosta was presiding over an online teleconference bond hearing on Easter Sunday. That's not normal. They don't normally have a bond hearing on a Sunday or even on Easter. Why do they do it for these illegals? He criticized the El Paso District Attorney's Office for not being ready for individual detention hearings for each defendant. It was Easter Sunday, homie. Maybe they thought they were going to do it today. It is the ruling of the court that all the rioting participant cases will be released on their own recognizance. Several of those illegals faced assault charges for toppling National Guard members during the riot. The precise number of individuals charged with riot participation, which is a Class B misdemeanor, has not been disclosed to the public. But Judge Acosta alluded to hundreds of arrestees who were legally due individual detention hearings within a 48-hour window. Somebody dropped the ball. Assistant District Attorney Ashley Martinez's plea for a postponement of the hearings was firmly denied by the magistrate. So if the DA's office is telling me that they're not ready to go, what we're going to do is we're going to release all these individuals on their own recognizance. Into the wind. You're never going to hear from them again. After the ruling, two additional migrants faced separate hearings on criminal mischief charges related to the damage of the fence. They received a $2,000 bond each, but Judge Antonio Ahn also sanctioned their release on personal recognizance bonds, and both of them are subject to immigration holds. So according to the El Paso Times, you got another hearing for more defendants scheduled today. Judge Humberto Acosta is well known for his decisions to dismiss criminal cases and return defendants to the community. So I don't know if this judge can be voted out or if anybody is interested in running for a magistrate judge position or if it's even possible, but he does not seem like a man who is fit for the bench. What a crazy situation. Totally paid off, Algorithm Q. Now listen to this. Here we've got a video of an official in Denver begging illegal immigrants to leave the city. It's a sanctuary city. They invited all of these illegals in, but now they have just become overwhelmed. They have no more resources. We've got nothing to give. Please leave. We don't need you anymore. So he's actually urging them to move to Chicago or New York because things are a lot better there, I guess, but, you know, we know they're not. So this guy was seen on camera begging these illegal aliens to reconsider their choice to settle in Denver, suggesting they head to other places like New York or Chicago for better support. So this is the city's newcomer communications liaison, Andre Carrera. He's also the political director for Mayor Mike Johnson, who's a Democrat. This was actually broadcast over the weekend, and he's revealed speaking to a group of illegals sheltered in Denver since their arrival on Tuesday. We're not going to block you if you want to stay here. I am here to tell you, you know your path is not over. Let's go ahead and take a listen.
The city of Denver is offering a stark warning to newly
arriving migrants. This guy, Kyle Clark, is Antifa. Kyle Clark is a huge piece of shit, allegedly, in my opinion.
Stay here and you will suffer. Denver's offering migrants help to move on to anywhere else in the country. Tonight, for the first time, we're able to see how Denver tries to convince migrants to leave in video obtained by Next from inside a migrant shelter.
The opportunities are over. That's Andres Carrera, political director for Denver Mayor Mike Johnston.
New York te da más, Chicago te da más,
He says, New York gives you more. Chicago gives you more. So I suggest you go there, where there is a longer-term shelter. There are also more job opportunities there.
Carrera is Denver's so-called newcomer communications liaison. That means that he meets the busloads of new arrivals. The city says this group got here on March 26, sent up by Texas's Republican Governor Greg Abbott. He warns them the jobs, the resources, the opportunities have already gone to the 40,000 migrants who came to Denver before them.
We have received too many migrants, and that is why we ran out of resources. Look, we're not going to block you if you want to stay here. I'm not going to block you. I'm here to let you know your path is not over. If you stay here, you're going to suffer even more, and I don't want to see this.
Parents listen quietly as children play on the floor. As Denver tells these families that have sometimes walked from one continent to another, that they just have to keep moving, but they don't have to walk. Denver will buy them a bus ticket.
Your path is not ended. Your path is not ended. That you travel a little more, you don't have to walk anywhere. We can get you a free ticket, a free ticket. You can go to any city. We can take you up to the Canadian border, wherever, wherever, just not here.
The city says it won't buy bus tickets to Canada, but it will help migrants get to American border cities up north. It's a desperate pitch by Denver, a city that has taken in more migrants per capita than any city outside the southern border, and is looking at $120 million in budget cuts to pay for migrant services.
See, as you can see, the more you f*** around, the more you're going to find out.
The moment of truth. Who in the crowd wants to go to a different city?
Okay, who wants to travel to different cities where there's more work?
And who wants to stay in Denver?
And which of you want to stay here? Everybody raises their hand.
Those,
everyone.
A migrant says.
Everyone.
The clock is now ticking for the migrants who arrived on that bus.
You brought it on yourself, Denver. You brought it on yourself. Oh, you love to see it. You love to see it. Listen, I can tell you right now, how do you stop the migrant crisis? Well, you quit telling people that they can come here and get everything for free, that you're going to house them, that you're going to feed them, that you're going to give them jobs. These things don't exist any longer. Okay? Close the border. Close the border. Reverse your sanctuary city designation like New York is doing. Wouldn't that be funny if they send them all to New York and then they get there and Mayor Adams is just like, back to Honduras. Oh, you got to love it. You got to love it. But I also hate it, okay, because they have created an enormous problem all across America, and they are now finding out what happens when you allow unrestricted illegal alien migration to come into American cities. I cannot wait for President Trump to return and for mass deportations to begin. It's so ridiculous that anybody is still arguing to allow this as a policy decision. The United States is crumbling before our very eyes. Okay, and take a look at this. Serter says, what happened to all the federal funding they got for being a sanctuary city? They got caught with their pants down with this migrant influx now that they have to spend the money, not launder it. Yeah, exactly. No dinero. There's nothing left. Go home. So what do you get when you allow for unrestricted illegal aliens to come into the country? Well, you get a city full of shelters with no places to sleep and no food to eat and no money to pass out. What about the people of America? What about the people of America who need help? Well, you're screwed. Or maybe you'll get raped and murdered. Because here we have yet another case of a convicted murderer and child rapist who is among the influx of illegal aliens coming across that southern border. I mean, you take a look at this animal's face, his dead eyes, and you just know this is not the guy you want to run into in an alleyway in the middle of the night. Oh, somebody also sent me a story from New York They said that they thought that maybe it was a migrant, but as far as I could tell, they hadn't identified who this person was. It seems likely it was a migrant. But there was some guy waiting outside of a business, and somebody came up and knocked on the door, and this dude just pulls a knife out and slashed this person, trying to slice their neck open. Now, they were fairer skinned, so I would say that, you know, either they were Caucasian or they were a lighter complected Hispanic. They weren't Asian and they weren't black. But this person is now wanted in New York. And scary times, man, scary times. I would not leave the house without protection of numerous types because you just never know. And I wouldn't even let somebody like that get close to me. Dude had like a mask on. He had a hoodie on. Like you could only see his eyes. You know, do not allow yourself to be put into a position where you could come across some psychopath like this, a murderer, a child rapist. This guy, however, was arrested. And he was caught at the southern border. U.S. Border Patrol agents in Deming, New Mexico. Oh, we don't hear much about New Mexico, so it's good to know that something is happening. He was arrested with a Mexican national, and he had prior convictions for first-degree murder, battery, stalking, and probation violations. Yeah, they're not sending our best. They're not sending their best, as President Trump said. This is what's known as an aggravated felon, and there are plenty of them, believe me. He does not belong in the U.S., let alone in your communities. So meanwhile, U.S. Border Patrol El Paso Chief Anthony Good confirmed the arrest of two other migrants, one who was previously convicted of raping a child. Santa Teresa and Las Cruces USBP agents apprehended two migrants from Mexico and members of the Paisa gang. One subject was previously convicted for aggravated rape of a child in Kansas. I don't know what the hell he's doing on the street. If he's convicted of aggravated rape in an American city, why is this guy allowed to even cross borders or roam freely? Both of the subjects are going to face criminal charges for illegal entry and formally removed from the United States. Just this week, Owens revealed that people from over 160 countries had entered the U.S. illegally from the southern border at the invitation of Joe Biden. 160 different countries. How many thousands of people does that mean? So here's perhaps some good news. I mean, you saw the tattoos in this guy's face. They can identify what gang he's from. There is actually an upcoming case at the Supreme Court that could weaken a key tool that the government uses in immigration law enforcement and throw the system into chaos. So this is a case at hand that deals with the doctrine of consular non-reviewability, which is the legal principle that a consular official's decision to refuse a visa to a foreigner is not subject to judicial review. I don't know how much they're using it at the time, but cracking down on this doctrine would inevitably harm the immigration system and cripple its ability to conduct business. And supporters of non-reviewability are obviously not in favor of weakening that. Opponents, such as those who favor expanded immigration, say relaxing it respects constitutional rights in the institution of marriage. If you're not a citizen of the United States of America, you don't have any right to protections under the Constitution of the United States. The doctrine is a judge-made exception to the Administrative Procedure Act. It's a federal statute that was enacted in 1946 that governs administrative law procedures for federal executive departments and independent agencies. The late U.S. Senator Pat McCarran from Nevada said the APA was a bill of rights for hundreds of thousands of Americans whose affairs are controlled or regulated in one way or another by agencies of the federal government. So decisions about who gets to enter the United States are vested in the legislative and the executive branches, not the judicial branch. But the U.S. Constitution gives Congress exclusive authority to create policies about the admissibility of individuals to the United States. However, at the same time, the legislative branch delegates the power to implement those policies to the executive branch. And on April 23rd, the Supreme Court is going to hear the Department of State versus Munoz, which concerns spousal sponsorship. Here's the facts of the case. Foreign citizens have minimal rights in the immigration process. So the Supreme Court is expected to focus on whether U.S. citizens have a constitutionally protected interest in visa petitions sponsoring their spouses. The case is about Luis Asencio Cordera. He's a Salvadoran citizen with no criminal record whose U.S. immigration visa was denied because a consular officer thought his tattoos indicated gang membership. His wife is a U.S. citizen, Sandra Munoz. She challenged the consular decision in court, and she argued that her rights as a citizen were violated. So the case actually goes back to 2005 when Mr. Asencio Cordera first arrived in the United States. Ms. Munoz married him in 2010. They had a child together who is a U.S. citizen, and the husband was in the country illegally. So Ms. Munoz sponsored her husband for a U.S. immigration visa. In 2015, he returned to El Salvador to obtain the visa. At the initial interview at the U.S. consulate in San Salvador, he was subjected to a body search. The officials photographed his tattoos and asked why he got them. They found a tattoo of comedy and tragedy theater masks, one of a pair of dice, and one of a pair of three ace cards. Not a pair, but of three ace cards. One of the tattoos depicted the Virgin of Guadalupe, Sigmund Freud, and a tribal design featuring a paw print. A lot of people from the 90s have those. Officials asked Mr. Asencio Cordera about his criminal record. He said he was arrested once when he got into a fight with a friend. They were held in jail for 3 days and released with no charges being laid. After a significant delay, officials ruled that Mr. Asencio Cordera could not be issued a visa because he was viewed as criminally inadmissible to the United States. What's hilarious about this story is that this guy probably isn't a criminal, okay? Despite the fact that he was living here illegally, I will give him that. Definitely a criminal in that respect. But he wasn't here operating in a gang. He, you know, he hadn't been in El Salvador for damn near 20 years. And he already has a wife and a child, so he's trying to do it the right way, albeit, you know, the wrong way. But meanwhile, we have child murderers and rapists just walking across the border, going to live in Denver for free, going to live in Chicago or New York for free, and nobody says boo about it. They're like, you know, welcome you with open arms. We're going to pay our citizens $500 a month to put you up in the guest house. But this guy, no, unfortunately, he's got a couple of tattoos. I've got tattoos. I wonder if they would assume that I was in a gang, but, you know, I digress. So, officials didn't elaborate other than to cite a passage in the Immigration and Nationality Act, which says any alien who a consular officer of the Attorney General knows or has reasonable ground to believe seeks to enter the United States to engage solely, principally, or incidentally in any other unlawful activity is inadmissible. So the government argues that under federal law, the visa denial cannot be challenged in court. But Ms. Munoz sued. Now, 3 years after the denial, she learned during the first discovery process in federal court that the government deemed him inadmissible to the country because he was thought to be a member of the MS-13 criminal organization. Well, let's figure it out. Is he or not? The consular official reached this conclusion based on the in-person review, a criminal review of Mr. Asencio Cordero, and a review of his tattoo. She wrote in a footnote that the government also presented to the court for in-camera review State Department documents containing sensitive information describing the basis for the consular officer's belief that Asencio Cordero was a member of MS-13. If there is evidence that suggests he's a member of MS-13, I don't care about your wife and your kid. Take them back to Salvador with you. The district court ruled in favor of the government back in March of 2021, and they noted the consular officer's findings that Mr. Asencio Cordero was a member of MS-13. Because the denial was based on a factually legitimate and bona fide reason, the court ruled that consular non-reviewability precludes respondents' challenges to the department decision. But a divided panel on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit vacated the district court's ruling and remanded the case to the lower court for reconsideration. The Ninth Circuit Court did not reject consular non-reviewability, but held that on the facts of the case, the application of the doctrine violated the due process clause of the U.S. Constitution. The court affirmed the district court's holding that Ms. Munoz's due process rights had been violated because as a U.S. citizen, she had both a fundamental liberty interest in their marriage and a liberty interest in residing in the country of citizenship. So the denial process had harmed her due process rights because its cumulative effect was a direct restraint on her own liberty. Man, if only they paid this much attention to arguments of liberty for everyone, right? So the court also held that the government had waited 3 years after the denial of the visa to provide the married couple with a declaration about the tattoo and did so only when prompted by judicial proceedings. So the court concluded the government had forfeited its term of consular non-reviewability by failing to hand that over to the couple in a timely manner. So the visa process cannot be shielded from judicial review, and the district court may look behind the government's decision. So the full Ninth Circuit denied a rehearing of the case in July of 23, upholding that panel's ruling. Judge Patrick Boumadi dissented from the denial of the rehearing, writing that the panel was wrong to find Ms. Munoz had a liberty interest in the visa denial of her husband. And this novel timeliness requirement has no basis in law, he wrote. Throughout the 100-year existence of consular non-reviewability, no court has invented the rule that the government must act within a certain time frame. So Congress has explicitly stated that the government has no duty to give timely notice to an alien excluded on security-related grounds. And that sounds like it makes a lot of sense to me. If you are a gang member and somebody recognizes that, they don't let you into the country, you know, bing, bang, boom, it's over and done with. Certainly it is a complication because this woman and their child are members, excuse me, citizens of the United States of America. But if this does go before the Supreme Court and they remove that ability from people at the consulates, then obviously it means that a whole hell of a lot more illegals with gang affiliations are going to get into the United States. We need a massive overhaul of the immigration system here, and we need to get back to basics. I think that honestly we need to cut off immigration for at least a period of time. There needs to be no new immigration into the United States until we can sort out the problems of the millions of illegals that we have here right now. Until that date, some point in the future, I don't care when it is, it needs to be shut down because this is a hornet's nest waiting to drop to the ground. And when it does, it is going to be bad. It's already bad. Right now, we're already getting stung, but being swarmed by a nest of angry hornets, it's going to be a lot worse, far, far worse. All right. Let me say thank you to Zach from Tennessee. Kyle Clark, security guard without a permit, killed an innocent man at the Capitol. He is Antifa for sure. I remember that. Yes, I absolutely remember that. That was shocking, and I couldn't believe that he got away with it. Raisin Kane, thank you very much for the can. Texas Lil Red, thank you for the can. Floricio, good to see you. Thank you very much for the phone. Appreciate it. Yeah, common sense immigration policies. Kick dreaming, is it too much to ask for in today's insane world? Well, the Russians don't seem to think so. There is a brand new effort deporting Muslim immigrants because of this shooting at the concert venue. They've begun deporting large numbers of Muslims in the wake of that deadly attack. And the Times is stating that anti-Islamic sentiment has soared in the aftermath, in which at least 144 people were killed and hundreds more were wounded or remain in critical condition. Now, the Islamic State has claimed responsibility, but we're gonna dive a little deeper into that in just a moment. So authorities in St. Petersburg have now begun deporting immigrants en masse since the deadly terror attack ripped through Moscow and the Crocus City Hall. More than 64 foreigners were deported from the city's Viborgsky district on Thursday alone. A number of buses carrying migrants was also headed to St. Petersburg Pulkovo International Airport on Friday. The countries where the migrants were being sent to were not specified, though it is known that labor migrants in Moscow mostly hail from poor Central Asian countries. The four men accused of carrying out the attack were from Tajikistan. It's a majority Muslim country that does not share a border with Russia. I think we have, let's see. I thought we had just a little bit more information. Islam is officially recognized in Russia. It's one of the country's sanctioned religions, and Muslims represent about 14% of the population. But there have been a lot of tensions between Moscow and the Muslim majority country like Chechnya and Dagestan. There have been separatist movements that have been set up there, and they're looking to create their own Islamic republics. But I have to say, I don't blame the Russians for doing this. I think this is a remarkably level-headed thing to do. Now, they're not deporting every single Muslim from the country. But if there's any possibility these people could be turned for a small amount of cash to kill Russians, and what a unique prospect, protecting the native people of a native land, then I think they ought to be removed. I think you might as well just, you know, throw caution to the wind. Let's just get it done with. So, interesting that we just had this attack. And the Americans said, hey, it's ISIS. Hey, guys, guess what? It's ISIS. It's ISIS. ISIS said, hey, it's us. Hey, it's us over here. Look in our direction. Almost immediately after this happened and tensions kind of flared between Moscow and D.C., we finally get word that they have solved Havana syndrome, guys. Look at this. They figured it out. And guess who's to blame? I'll give you one guess. They say it's the Russians. It may be. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, I figured as long as I've been hearing about this, I said, who could this possibly be? China? Russia? I mean, that's the only one that makes any sense. So there was a pretty lengthy report, about an hour-long report on 60 Minutes over the weekend. I watched it. They spoke with victims of Havana syndrome. They spoke with some of the people from within the government who were investigating this, not just since 2016, but it turns out the earliest reported cases of this go back to 2014 during the Obama regime. So the former head of the Pentagon's investigation into Havana syndrome told 60 Minutes that he believes Russia is the source behind the attacks that are hitting U.S. officials both abroad and at home. I wasn't aware that there were as many attacks here in the United States. And it's not just people working for the CIA. It's also sometimes their families as well. So this group called The Insider, it's Russian exiles that are journalists, and also Der Spiegel. Der Spiegel, The Insider, and 60 Minutes. They put together this report. They presented a lot of evidence that I had never seen before, but it connects the incidents of Havana syndrome directly to Russia, and they identified a very specific Russian intelligence unit labeled 29155. So Havana syndrome obviously got its name from the cases that popped up in Havana. There were both U.S. and Canadian diplomats and intelligence officials, read CIA, that reported in 2016 hearing strange noises and they had sensations of pressure. They later developed debilitating symptoms. They got vertigo. They had migraines. They had hearing and cognitive problems. And then after initially appearing in Havana, they started appearing in other places all around the world. Now, this led to suspicions of a foreign adversary. Obviously, Russia was already having some tensions with the United States. 2014, when this first occurred in Ukraine, isn't that interesting? That's when the State Department and the CIA led the Maidan Revolution and deposed the democratically elected government of Ukraine, which was beginning to normalize relations with Russia. Big surprise. So no surprise that the first cases were reported actually in Ukraine. And we know that there's a ton of CIA bases and presence there. They are basically running the Ukrainian SBU. More on that in a moment. But they figured it must have been some kind of directed energy weapon. Incidentally, when the cases were first being reported, the government actually denied that there was any sort of unknown weapon that was being used. You know, I've always thought that they did not want to admit that this was a possible novel attack that was being perpetrated on Americans, because it's the kind of thing they'd like to get their hands on and make totally disappear for their own clandestine uses. They don't want the world to know that these directed energy weapons exist, probably because they've got their own directed energy weapons. And maybe the Russians are just not saying anything about it. Or maybe the United States has been attempting to develop something like this, and to date, they have not been as successful as the purveyors of this Havana syndrome weapon. But the incidents are still ongoing. You might think that this is over or that it ended a couple of years ago, but it has continued. And it hasn't just been spooks. I mean, it's also been people in the FBI, in a number of different capacities at the FBI specifically. So it also occurred last year at the NATO summit in Lithuania. Joe Biden was actually there, and while they were there, a senior Pentagon official had to seek medical care because he was attacked by one of these dudes. Greg Edgreen, who ran the investigation for the Defense Intelligence Agency, I'm going to be asking General Flynn about this on Friday, said that as a result of those incidents, U.S. officers abroad have been neutralized. It's a novel weapon because nobody dies, but oftentimes they become disabled. They become so debilitated they can no longer do their jobs effectively. So when asked if he thought the United States is being attacked, he said, in my opinion, yes. And he said, by whom? Oh, by Russia, Ed Green said. Now, I don't doubt that Russia would come up with a novel weapon like this that could throw us off our game. One thing that was notable is he said this was not happening to low-level people. This was happening to the top 5-10% of these investigative and clandestine agencies. There was another attack that happened down here in Florida. There was an FBI agent who was interviewed for the report, but she wasn't named. And she was discussing how in 2021, and then a year later when she was in California, she got hit by multiple attacks. Now, this agent was called Carrie in the investigation. And what's interesting is that she had been investigating a suspected Russian spy. His name was Vitaly Kovalev, and he came to the United States as a chef. But he was arrested driving a white Camaro at 110 miles an hour in the Florida Keys back in June of 2020. They actually had the arrest video, and it shows that police find him with a whole bunch of notes about different bank accounts with a lot of money in them. He had a Russian passport. He had a device that could erase the car's computer, and he also had a GPS record, which was, you know, giving him information about somebody. But the two incidents that affected Carrie totally disabled her, and it basically seemed like it could have been revenge for her investigation into Vitaly Kovalev. He was in prison at the time that the attacks happened. But it, again, totally disabled her. She ended up developing vertigo. She was throwing up. She said that she felt like she had early onset dementia. She couldn't remember things. She was wrecked. So he did turn out to be a Russian military electrical engineer, not just a chef, and he maintained a top security clearance. A journalist with The Insider did the investigation into him, and he was previously employed by another organization called Bellingcat. But Grozov uncovered the identities of other Russian operatives who had attempted to poison Sergei Skripal and the late Alexei Navalny. So Kovalev traveled back to Russia after he served a 30-month prison sentence in the United States, allegedly said nothing to them, but he was thrown in jail. And he is believed to have died fighting on the front lines in Ukraine. They were able to find a death certificate for him. Now, is he really dead? Did the Russian security forces deem him to be a risk because he had been in the United States for too long and they put him on the front lines knowing that he might die? Maybe. Maybe they just faked his death so that nobody would come looking for him because his identity as a member of this elite group had already been uncovered. But there was also another accounting linking the top secret unit that they mentioned in the GRU 29155 to the use specifically of non-lethal acoustic weapons. And there was also evidence placing members of that elite unit in Tbilisi, Georgia, where it's another place where Americans reported incidents of Havana syndrome back in 2021. So intelligence agencies had said that Havana syndrome could be explained away by environmental factors. And I always believed that was BS. It's not just stress. It's not just the conditions of work. But the CIA and other federal agencies are also paying compensation to the officers who were injured in these specific attacks. And government doctors have certified that they did, in fact, suffer brain injuries that have no known cause or explanation. But the Defense Department is still investigating new cases of these anomalous health incidents, and they are treating them as counterintelligence incidents. And doctors have developed protocols to treat Savannah syndrome and its victims. So they've gotten a testimony from a number of different victims, pretty much everybody who comes down with it. They immediately take an interest in them. The House Intelligence Committee has also launched a formal investigation into just how U.S. intelligence agencies have handled the Havana syndrome investigation. And you'll never guess who's representing victims of Havana syndrome. Attorney Mark Zaid, who you've probably heard his name come up in the attacks on President Trump, he says there is a cover up of the specific cases of Havana syndrome. So sources told the investigators many of the officers injured were involved in work related to Russia, or they were stationed in places where Russian spies could attack them with ease, places like Cuba, China, Vietnam, and most of all, Europe. You had incidents in Hanoi, Bogota, London, and India, and they all happened ahead of or during visits of senior U.S. officials. So Cuba, obviously, where this started off, is a close military ally of Russia. They have said they have no involvement or understanding of the incidents that happened. And Cuban diplomats and scientists have insisted that the injuries are psychosomatic. I don't believe that. But they also say it could be just a case of mass hysteria, or maybe they have pre-existing conditions. But in a number of cases, CIA agents were receiving compensation for brain injuries linked to Havana syndrome, and Cuba's vice foreign affairs minister wrote on X, "Without any shame, pundits and media outlets continue to recycle the fabulous legend of attacks against U.S. diplomats. No evidence has surfaced. The scientific community has discarded it. Yet there is money to be made and political slander against Cuba to be pushed." I do believe Havana syndrome is real. This is Alexei right here. This is him getting arrested, and seems like he definitely was a Russian spy. So I have no doubt that they may have actually made this up. I have no doubt that the Russians made this this weapon. The only thing about it is that now that it's being announced, I think that it may have something to do with the final story that we're going to talk about. So as I said, the United States said, hey, it's ISIS. It's not Ukraine. ISIS said, hey, it's ISIS. It's not Ukraine. Russia said, hey, it's probably Ukraine and NATO aligned nations. And, obviously the United States warned Russia about terror attacks taking place at at concert halls. So now it appears that it actually is Ukraine, and we're getting that from the head of Kiev's SBU. That is their security service, the one that's working closely with the CIA. Now, as a result of this announcement, Russia is demanding that Ukraine arrest this guy and hand him over. His name is Vasyl Malyuk. He actually admitted on Ukrainian television that he had a specific role in these attacks. This is not surprising. Of course, Moscow is going to want a retaliatory response. They've already sent a couple of hypersonic missiles into Ukraine to take out government installations where they think these SBU people might be working. This is a shocking allegation, a shocking admission, because now the Ukrainians have just voluntarily admitted it on television. He said, we will not officially admit this in any way, but at the same time, I will tell you some details. So if you haven't done it, then why are you admitting details? So Reuters is reporting Russia has turned over to Ukrainian authorities its demands for the immediate arrest and extradition of all those connected to the terrorist acts in question. And the ministry said that those handed over must include SBU head Vasyl Malyuk, who has acknowledged in an interview with Ukrainian television ICTV his service was behind attacks on the bridge linking Crimea to the Russian mainland. The Russian side demands that the Kiev regime immediately cease all support for terrorist activity, extradite guilty parties, and compensate the victims for damages. Ukraine's violation of its obligations under anti-terrorist conventions will result in it being held to account in international legal terms. Other barbaric terrorist attacks using explosive devices cost the lives of journalists D.A. Dugina, M.Y. Fomin, led to the serious injury of writer E.N. Prelipin, and the death of his driver A.I. Shubin, the death of five people as a result of the explosion on the Crimea Bridge. 42 people were injured in an explosion in a cafe in St. Petersburg. And it seems kind of odd for them to be demanding that people listen to these things. I can't believe that Ukraine is admitting that they did all this stuff, but we know they did all this stuff. I mean, they're the only ones that make any sense. So, of course, Russia is going to demand that they hand them over. I don't think Ukraine is going to do that. I don't think the United States is going to stand for it either. But they said that this is what we demand. And if they don't do it, then I think Russia is going to respond. This is an act of terrorism. These are acts of terrorism. You've got many, many people dead. You've got clear reasoning for the Ukrainians to end up doing this stuff. And so they're going to go ahead and just brag about it on national television. Anyways, I think it's insane that they're doing that. But maybe they think that they're protected by NATO and they think that they can essentially do whatever it is they want to do. All right. So we're going to go ahead and end it there, guys. Let me say thank you to everybody for hanging out with us. We've got 3,700 people here over on Rumble and 798 likes. If you wouldn't mind, please hit that like button on your way out. If you're over there on Pilled, please hit the red pill on your way out. I'm going to go ahead and pass out these gold pills, and then tonight I'll be back at 10:30 on Baseless Conspiracies with John. We're going to talk about the overlapping of Christian holidays with pagan holidays. And we're going to ask the question about whether or not that's a conspiracy or not. All right, here we go. Good luck. God bless. If I don't see you tonight, hopefully I'll see you tomorrow right here at 5 p.m. Eastern for another episode of Red Pill News. Good luck and God bless. Thank you, Larry.